Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. In the early 1980s, formerly healthy gay men started to develop an unknown disease. Men started dying, and what started as a few men skyrocketed into thousands. Communities in New York, San Francisco, and other U.S. cities were decimated. Cleve Jones was there. Jones started his work in advocacy as an intern for gay rights leader Harvey Milk. After Milk was assassinated, Jones began his work in public health. He is perhaps most well known as the person who came up with the idea for the AIDS Memorial Quilt, the largest piece of community folk art in the world. And Jones is not just an activist. He was diagnosed with HIV in the early 80s and has been living with AIDS for more than two decades. Jones is one of the co-chairs for this year's AIDS Walk Wisconsin and 5K, which will be this Saturday at the Summerfest grounds. He joins us by phone to talk about his work. Cleve Jones, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm very excited to be coming back to Wisconsin to be one of the co-chairs of the 30th anniversary AIDS Walk Wisconsin and 5K run.
Yeah. So I want to take like a big step back, kind of in your timeline. How did you first become involved with the gay rights movement in general?
Well, when I was still a teenager, I hitchhiked up to San Francisco from Phoenix, and I met, just by chance, I met some of the real pioneers of our movement. And one of them was a man that most people have heard of now, named Harvey Milk. And Harvey mentored me and took me with him to City Hall when he got elected to the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco. And I worked with him until he was assassinated in November of 1978. And after that, I was hired by the Speaker of the California State Assembly to go to our capital, Sacramento, and work primarily on health issues. And it was in that capacity that I first got involved with the fight against what we now call HIV/AIDS.
So you were really on the front lines of this issue. What was it like right at the beginning?
You know, I think it's important for people to remember what it was like during the first decade of our fight against this disease. We had no effective treatment. We had a government that was not particularly concerned. There was a lot of stigma, a lot of bigotry, a lot of really hateful and ignorant behavior. And people suffered. And in my town, San Francisco, during that decade and a half before effective treatments were made available, over 20,000 of our citizens were killed by the disease. And in my community, it was really, it was like an avalanche came through and took everybody away. It was terrible.
You yourself are positive. When did you first learn that you'd contracted this disease?
By the time the test was developed, the HIV antibody test, I had already imagined that I was HIV positive simply because one of my partners had was one of the first to die of the disease in our city. But I found out the very week that the test became available. And it's kind of interesting because I had participated in a study. And there were samples of my blood going back many, many years. And I learned that the virus had been in my body since 1977. But I didn't show any symptoms and begin to get sick until 1993. So I think I'm an example of someone who can have the virus without even knowing it or having any signs of it for a very, very long time. But then eventually I did get very sick, almost died, and I'm only alive today because the activists and the scientists and the research were successful in pushing for more funding and getting the drugs available.
Yeah. I mean, you yourself said that you weren't that surprised that you had it, but what was getting that diagnosis like in the early 80s?
It was a death sentence. I never gave up hope, though. And I was fortunate, unlike many people, my family did not reject me. My church did not reject me. My friends supported me. But I'm a realistic person, and I knew there was very little chance that I was going to survive it. The hardest part of it was getting the courage to tell my mom and dad and my grandmother. So I was very close to my grandmothers, and telling them was probably the most difficult part of the whole experience.
Yeah. I think many people may know you as the person who came up with the idea for the AIDS Memorial Quilt. When did you conceive of that idea?
Well, every year on November 27th, in San Francisco, we hold a candlelight march to remember Harvey Milk and our former mayor, George Moscone, who were both assassinated back in 1978. And in 1985, as we were holding that march, getting ready for the march, the death toll from AIDS in San Francisco hit 1,000. And I knew a great many of those first 1,000 because I'd been, you know, so involved in the community. And, you know, I was just really struck by that number and the fact that there was so little evidence. And if you come to Castro Street today, you'll see beautiful Victorians, just like it was then, and restaurants and bars and cafes. You'll hear music and smell food and hear laughter, and you'll have no idea that you are at the epicenter of this terrible tragedy. And I got so frustrated by it and the lack of concern, and I wanted to illustrate how many people had died. So in that march, I had everybody carry signs on which we'd printed the names of our friends and neighbors who had passed from AIDS. And we took it to the federal building and climbed up ladders and taped all of these names all over the wall of the federal building. And as I was looking at that patchwork of names, I thought it looked like some kind of strange quilt. And I thought of my grandmothers and the quilt that they'd made. And it was such a comforting and middle American traditional values kind of symbol. And I want traditional family values to apply to me and my extended family. And that was the idea. And everybody laughed at me. I became quite boring because all I could talk about for a whole year was this idea. And finally, some friends of mine helped me start. And it became the world's largest community arts project.
When you first saw this project after its completion, what did you think?
You know, we unfolded for the first time on the National Mall in October of 1987 with 1,920 panels. And I was just overwhelmed by the beauty of it. I knew it would help people cope with their grief, right? I hoped it would help people cope with their grief. I felt it would be a great tool to help the media understand that behind all these mind-numbing numbers and statistics, you know, there are human beings and human families that are being enduring terrible suffering. But I was not prepared for the beauty of the thing, and it really took my breath away, and I felt so proud of all of our volunteers. And then it just kept growing and growing and growing. The last time it was displayed in its entirety, we covered the entire National Mall from the steps of the Capitol to the Washington Monument, and that was an extraordinary sight.
Yeah, what do you think of it when you see it now compared to, of course, when it was first created?
It just reminds me of how far we've come. And everywhere I've been, I've seen evidence of the incredible progress that's been made. And when you look at organizations like the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin and the agency in San Francisco that I helped start, the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, these were started all across our country and around the world at the beginning by volunteers. Who understood that their governments weren't moving rapidly enough. And then to see over the years how these services have grown and become more sophisticated, and the technology that we have to fight the disease has grown. So one of the reasons why I'm really happy to be part of these upcoming events with the AIDS Resource Center is that even though we don't have a cure yet or a vaccine, we have the ability to stop AIDS, and that's what is happening in Wisconsin and other places where people have really pushed for treatment as prevention. So when a client of the AIDS Resource Center goes into an appointment in Milwaukee or, or wherever, they're going to get, if they're HIV negative, they're going to get the counseling, support, the information and the resources they need to stay HIV negative. And if they're HIV positive, they're going to get the medications that will suppress the virus to keep them healthy and also to ensure that they cannot transmit the virus. So what we now know is that people like myself who are being successfully treated are not capable of passing on the virus. And that's why the AIDS Walk and other events like that are so important, because that provides funding that allows resource centers to make these services available and get people into treatment and stop the disease. In San Francisco, we just got really amazing new numbers that last year, under 200 new infections were reported. That's down from 2,300 not so long ago. And in Wisconsin, we see that people with HIV are living longer than almost anywhere else in the world. And that is the kind of progress that we know we can make, but we can't falter. And one of the things that concerns me is that so many people think that the AIDS pandemic is over. It's not over. 700,000 people died of AIDS around the world last year. So that's why organizations like the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin are really critically important and need to be supported by their communities.
You know, as you say, so much has changed with how HIV/AIDS is treated, how it's looked at in many ways, but it isn't perfect. What needs to change?
We all know that we still don't have a vaccine or a cure. I believe someday we will have that, and one of my personal goals is to live long enough to see that happy day come. We can't let our education efforts wind down. Young people are still making decisions every day that affect their health. We need them to understand the risks of HIV. We need them to know exactly how it is transmitted, how they can protect themselves and their loved ones. So in many ways, you know, the issues have been pretty constant. There is a resistance in some parts of the country to providing young people with those tools that they need to stay safe, to stay healthy. And we need funding. And I know that, you know, communities all across the country, and believe me, I'm still traveling a lot, and I see firsthand the really heroic efforts that people are engaged in. But the funding is not always keeping up with the needs. And it's regrettable that things like AIDS Walk Wisconsin are even necessary. In a perfect world, we wouldn't have to be going out and doing this kind of fundraising. The resources would be there, but we have to do it.
Yeah. Well, Cleve Jones, thank you so much for speaking with me today and sharing so much of your work.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to coming back. As I mentioned, I travel constantly, and I have visited so many of these agencies. And in my opinion, the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin is, without question, one of the absolute best I've ever seen. So I'm happy to be supporting them and look forward to getting back soon. Thank you.
Cleve Jones is an AIDS and LGBT rights activist. He's the co-founder of the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, and he conceived the idea for the AIDS Memorial Quilt. Jones is also one of this year's honorary co-chairs for AIDS Walk Wisconsin. The walk and 5K run will be this Saturday, October 5th, at the Summerfest Grounds.